People here have also denounced the terrorist attack in the city of Kerman that claimed scores of lives. They said it reveals the Israelis' fear of martyr Soleimani even after his martyrdom.
Zionism is a criminal movement that has proven throughout its history to be linked to terrorism and criminality. There is no operation targeting the resistance without Zionism having a hand in it, whether through Daesh or other Zionist and American tools. We affirm that these blasts, with their ugliness, reveal the enemy's fear of martyr Soleimani even after his martyrdom. This criminal act will not discourage the resistance countries from continuing to confront Israeli entity, but rather will push the people to unite against it.
Every Friday, people gather in the Sabine Square in Sana'a to reaffirm their full support for the Palestinians and the acts of resistance against the Israeli enemy.
Yemenis say they want their voices to be heard by the international community, which keeps turning a blind eye to Israeli brutal war crimes against Palestinians. They have also vowed to continue supporting Palestinians at all costs, even if they engage in a direct war with all Western powers. Abdelatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Iranian embassy in Damascus held an official ceremony this Friday for the martyrs of the terrorist bombings in Kerman. The twin attacks killed and injured hundreds of civilians during the fourth assassination anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The Iranian ambassador stressed that this heinous crime will not stop Iran from supporting the resistance in the region.
Iran and Syria stand united on the axis of resistance. We have the same cause. Such crimes will only strengthen our determination to continue on this path. Iran and Syria remain steadfast in following this path until achieving a decisive victory. Enemies will not gain any result through committing these crimes, even if they consider them a victory. It will lead them to defeat and failure.
As President Maduro and the Venezuelan foreign minister stated, Venezuela, Iran, and Syria share a common enemy against whom we are prevailing in this stage. We strongly condemn these cowardly attacks against free and independent Iranian people. We vehemently condemn this criminal act.
Syrian officials, parliament members, representatives from several resistance factions, and some other diplomats were in attendance. The mourners expressed their determination to gain victory over terrorism. Syria condemned this vicious act and expressed full trust in Iran's ability to overcome this agony and punish the perpetrators.
On behalf of the Syrian Arab Republic, we extend our deepest condolences and heartfelt sympathies to the Islamic Republic of Iran, its leadership, government, and people over this heinous and cowardly terrorist act that targeted innocent civilians in the city of Kerman. We support Iran in combating terrorism and punishing the perpetrators of this terrorist crime.
We are here to offer our heartfelt condolences to our brothers in the Islamic Republic of Iran over this tragic event. We are confident that this affliction will not hold the march of development, civilization, and advancement led by Ayatollah Khamenei in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
From this land, which is soaked with the blood of Syrian and Iranian martyrs, we want to tell our brothers and sisters in Kerman that our blood is the same and we suffer from similar tragedies, but our sacrifices unite us against terrorism and strengthen our resolve to defeat our common enemies. A similar ceremony was also held at the office of the representative of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in Damascus. Attendees condemned the terrorist attack, considering it a clear proof that the spirit of martyr Haj Qasem Soleimani is still alive through his legacy, frightening the terrorists and the enemies of the resistance front. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
United as always, Iranians gathered after Friday prayers in the capital, Tehran, to show their outrage and acts of terror in the country after scores of people were killed in bombings in Kerman. They say while it was Daesh which claimed responsibility for the terrorist attack, the U.S. and its regional ally Israel are actually behind these atrocities.
Daesh is the
Daesh is created by the U.S. Former U.S. President Donald Trump once said that Obama was the founder of Daesh. They have caused disasters in the country for more than 40 years, but our people are still standing for the Islamic Revolution. Are they blind? How did they not see this?
Israel and the U.S. have a long history of hostility against the Iranian people. Wednesday terrorist attacks in Kerman were an obvious proof of that, as they've been supporting different terrorist groups, including Daesh, in the region.
Daesh?
Daesh couldn't do this by itself. It has a supporter. Their supporters are the U.S. and Israel.
Mothers were among those taking part in the rally. I asked them how they felt when they saw the dead bodies of innocent people as the attack occurred on Mother's Day in Iran.
There's no doubt that Israel and the U.S. were behind this horrific terrorist attack. It hurts every human being's feeling when on Mother's Day they see a mother killed while holding her baby.
During the rally, people also mourned for a 20-year-old girl named Faizeh Rahimi. Faizeh was a student who was killed in the attack. Iranian students of all ages were participating in the rally to show their support for martyrs like Faizeh.
Imam Khomeini once said, "Kill us, but our nation will become more awakened."
Western-backed terrorist attacks in Iran have mainly targeted popular backing for the Islamic Republic, but the people say they will continue to support the establishment and hold heroes like martyr Qasem Soleimani in their hearts. Farzana Shuryan, Tehran.
Yemen has resumed its military operations in the Red Sea by targeting another Israeli-linked ship traveling to occupied Palestine. The latest attack comes just 2 days after a U.S. Navy helicopter killed 10 Yemeni naval soldiers while patrolling the Red Sea. The spokesman for Yemen's armed forces stated that the U.S. attacks did not and will not stop Yemen's military operations against Israeli ships until the genocide in Gaza ends.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that maritime shipping is open in the Red Sea and in the Arabian Sea to the entire world except for the ports in the occupied Palestine. We also confirmed that any acts of aggression from the U.S. will not pass by without punishment and retaliation. We also warned the American enemy and any other nation of transgression by protecting any shipments heading to the Israeli entity.
The Yemeni public has praised the army's military efforts against Israel.
Today we targeted an Israeli ship because they are prohibited from the Red Sea. We will eventually march into occupied Palestine so we can get revenge for all the martyrs. America will not be able to protect Israel. We will continue to target them.
Although the U.S. and other Western nations have urged the Yemeni government to end its continuous military operations in the Red Sea, many Yemenis believe that the blockade of Israeli shipments should continue until the genocide in Palestine.
We prepare for jihad against the enemies from land, air, and sea. We've already endured 10 years of war, blockade, and all types of struggles. Therefore, the time has come for us to retaliate because their blood is not worth more than ours, or the blood of a Palestinian child who is dying of hunger and being burned by Israeli bombs and missiles. Therefore, retaliation is coming.
What is clear is that the U.S. will continue to support Israel, even if it means starting another war in West Asia. Yemen's Ansar Allah movement had previously stated they are ready to take America on directly. Yemen has vowed to retaliate against the U.S. military presence in the Red Sea for the killing of the 10 Navy Yemeni personnel. They have also vowed to continue to target Israeli-linked ships and the ships of any nation that joins the U.S. in its hostile actions against Yemen. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
UN-backed famine monitors said that it is predicted that between December 8, 2023 and February 7, 2024, Gaza's population will be the highest share of people facing high levels of acute food insecurity ever classified by the Integrated Food Security Phase classification since its establishment nearly 20 years ago. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "Gaza endured some of the most intense Israeli regime bombardment of the war." According to Reuters, while Palestinian resistance fighters in the territory continue to fire rockets as far north as Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, UN-backed famine monitors said that it is predicted that between December 8, 2023 and February 7, 2024, Gaza's population will be the highest share of people facing high levels of acute food insecurity, ever classified by the Integrated Food Security Phase classification since its establishment nearly 20 years ago. Around 1 out of every 115 people among Gaza's population of 2.3 million, more than half of them children, and the vast majority refugees have been reported killed in the past several weeks. Morgue workers in Gaza have struggled to compile casualty figures amid the collapse of communication services and other infrastructure due to the Israeli offensive, according to Reuters. The actual number of fatalities is much higher. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza's death toll only includes those who have been identified or claimed by relatives. Several thousand others are missing, many of them under the rubble of destroyed buildings. Recovering and identifying those people's remains will take years. According to Dr. Gilbert Burnham, a doctor and professor at Johns Hopkins University who has worked since 1970s on humanitarian health problems in wars, Reuters reported. The official Gaza death toll also doesn't include people who have succumbed to disease born of the Zionist regime siege or because they were unable to access medical care for chronic illnesses and other conditions, with most hospitals in the territory rendered non-functional. A wave of secondary mortality is underway while the United States, for a third time, delayed a vote at the UN Security Council calling for an increase in humanitarian aid in Gaza. The spokesperson for Washington's mission to the UN claimed that the Security Council proposal would actually slow down delivery of humanitarian aid by directing the UN to create an unworkable monitoring mechanism. The United States appears to be blocking any initiative to bring necessities into Gaza that isn't directly controlled by the Zionist regime. Human Rights Watch said that the Zionist regime is using starvation as a weapon of war by deliberately denying civilians access to food and water. While the Zionist regime has accused the UN of not adequately delivering aid, humanitarian agencies point to the Zionist regime as a source for bottlenecks preventing the provision of life-saving assistance to civilians enduring catastrophic conditions. Washington is also concerned over language that comes close to calling for ceasefire which the U.S. and Israel says would benefit the resistance groups. Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, lashed out against those pushing to end the violence in Gaza for what he said was their failure to call on resistance groups to surrender. Blinken claimed, "How can it be that there are no demands made of the aggressor and only demands made of the victim?" Absolving the fabricated regime of Israel of all responsibility for what independent UN human rights experts and hundreds of scholars of international law say is a genocide unfolding in Gaza. While the United States continues to buy the Zionist regime time for its military offensive, UN officials and international agencies are warning that the cost to civilians grows worse with each day of the total war and complete siege on Gaza. International agencies are reporting catastrophic levels of acute food insecurity across the Gaza Strip, with around 85% of the population displaced, many people relocating multiple times and currently concentrated into an increasingly smaller geographic area. The UN-backed Integrated Food Security Phase classification said that there is a risk of famine and is increasing each day that the current situation of intense hostilities and restricted humanitarian access persists or worsens. Virtually all households are skipping meals every day, the IPC added. 4 out of 5 households in Gaza's north and among displaced families in the south go entire days and nights without eating. The IPC pointed to the extreme reduction in the delivery of humanitarian food assistance to Gaza, which most people in the territory relied on before October 7th, as a primary reason for widespread and severe food insecurity. Import restrictions and the suspension of commercial activities in Gaza are also major factors. While fighting has caused widespread damage to food production, including farmland and infrastructure such as greenhouses, bakeries, and warehouses, Arif Hussein, a senior official at the UN's World Food Programme, told Reuters that in his 20 years of experience, he has never seen something that's bad happening this quickly. The World Food Programme said that the recent opening of a Kerem Salem commercial crossing for humanitarian aid is a long-awaited step to increase the flow of aid into Gaza. The reopening of Kerem Abu Salem allowed the agency to bring in aid to Gaza via Jordan for the first time since October 7th, but the aid that is coming in is a fraction of the goods that entered Gaza on a daily basis before that date, and needs have sharply increased. The UN's largest provider of humanitarian assistance said humanitarian aid alone is not enough. An explosion on the Palestinian side of Kerem Abu Salem crossing was reported recently, killing 4 people, staffing the crossing and forcing the UN to hold pickups. Abby Maxman, the head of Oxfam America, said that the high levels of starvation in Gaza are a direct, damning, and predictable consequence of not only Israel's actions, but also U.S. President Joe Biden's unconditional support and diplomatic approach. Maxman added the U.S. cannot continue to stand by and allow Palestinians to be starved to death. Philippe Lazzarini, the head of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, said recently that Palestinians in Gaza will soon die because of a combination of weakened immunity, disease outbreak, and hunger. Responding to the Zionist regime's president, Isaac Herzog, claimed that the UN was to blame for not getting more aid into Gaza. Lazzarini pointed to the ongoing bombardment and inefficient administrative procedures at the crossings. When trucks come in, they are not allowed to go to the final destination, as they are required to offload at the Gaza boundary and their cargo loaded onto trucks that never leave the territory. Lazzarini said, if we would let trucks go in to the final destination, you can let trucks come in the hundreds, and this would not be a problem. Tedros Adhanom, the head of World Health Organization, said he was deeply concerned about the toxic mix of disease, hunger and lack of hygiene and sanitation in Gaza, which is already experiencing soaring rates of infectious disease outbreaks. He said that diarrhea cases have soared among children under the age of 5, which can be lethal for malnourished children, more so in the absence of functioning health services. The UN health chief said this carnage must stop. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, said that recently displaced children in Gaza are only accessing 1.5 to 2 liters of water each day, well below the recommended requirements just for survival. UNICEF added concerns of waterborne diseases such as cholera and chronic diarrhea are particularly heightened given the lack of safe water, especially following this week's rains and flooding.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has been more than 3 months since the Israeli genocide on Gaza has been taking place, from bombs falling on their heads to being ordered to move from place to place without any fuel to not having enough food or water. Gazans literally live in hell. Now the majority of the 2.5 million Palestinians are internally displaced and living in tents. Residents feel that any moment could be their last one alive as the Israeli regime continues to indiscriminately hit anywhere from homes to hospitals to UN-run schools. Nowhere is sacred and no one is safe. Well, with this backdrop, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken calls on the Israeli regime to do more to protect civilians in Gaza. Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Daniel McAdams, Executive Director of Ron Paul Institute out of Lake Jackson, Texas. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway out of Oslo. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start this off in Texas. Daniel, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the U.S. Secretary of State currently calling for the Israeli regime to do more to protect civilians in Gaza. I mean, what exactly does that mean?
Well, what is this, his fourth trip? What have they had to show for it? Absolutely nothing. At this point, do more to protect civilians. Well, they've already completely destroyed the civilian infrastructure, the 23,000 plus civilians who've been slaughtered. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Because Daniel, I'm going to interrupt you because I'm having some audio difficulties. Hopefully, we can take care of that, and I'll come back to you. So sorry. Glenn, I'll propose that same question then to you. What exactly does the U.S. Secretary of State means when he says that?
Well, I would agree with the former account of it. I think that it's very little, very late, because Gaza has been completely leveled. They destroyed the entire Gaza Strip. Thousands of civilians, the majority of dead are women and children. So the Israelis have already razed Gaza to the ground. And to now call for restraint, not only is it late, but it also seems somewhat disingenuous, because this is not just the United States as a third party giving recommendations or trying to pressure Israel. This is also an American war on Palestine, because it's the Americans who provides the finance, it's the Americans who provides the weapons. So if the Americans wanted this war to be over, they could do it by tomorrow by simply cutting off the Israelis. So they do have a huge leverage to put pressure on Israel. But again, this is not what they're doing. I think they want to have it both ways. They would like to provide their full support to Israel to destroy Gaza, and at the same time they want to pretend as if they abide by human rights and that they're concerned for the death of civilians. So it doesn't seem very serious. I think it's a way of warming up or trying to get on the good side of various Arab leaders, among the Gulf states, as Blinken is going on a tour to try to win some sympathy and win these leaders over. So I wouldn't see it being more serious than this, than a marketing campaign.
Okay. Well, Daniel, hopefully the audio is better. Now, far too many innocent Palestinians have already been killed. So this is according to Blinken. What an amazing discovery after at least 23,000 people have been murdered in Gaza and more than 3 months have passed. I mean, why does he make such a statement like far too many innocent Palestinians have been killed? I mean, what does that mean unless you're actually trying to stop the killing?
Well, they've been killed with American weapons and American money, so he should know better than anyone how many have been killed. I mean, the man is a complete empty suit. He's got dead eyes. In Doha, just before he was traveling to Israel, he said that the U.S. conditions all military aid on strict adherence to international and humanitarian law. I mean, he said something like that with a straight face. And the 30-some thousand people that have been killed, as I started off saying before we had the problem, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because as we know, many times that number are going to die after you've just completely destroyed the infrastructure. There's no medicine left. There's no shelter. There's no food. So there'll be many, many times more. So for him to say now that, well, can you please try to curtail the killing? They've already put the measures in place to kill far, far more more people.
And let me just stay with you, Daniel. When we look at that situation, you said they've already put the measures in place to kill far more people. What is it that the United States is getting out of this? Why does it give this blind support to Israel?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, a Biden administration, now let's not forget, this is a dysfunctional administration. But also let's remember that support for Israel is bipartisan. It is the most bipartisan thing in Washington, D.C. It is the one thing that both parties, with very few exceptions, can agree on, which is a blind support for Israel and a disregard for actual U.S. national interests, which aren't in supporting Israel by any stretch of the imagination. There really is nothing in it for the administration, but President Biden set the stage initially after the October 7 situation, where he flew over to Israel and basically gave them the green light to do anything they wanted. We're not going to put any brakes on you. You can do whatever we want, whatever you want. And by the way, here's the money and weapons to do so. He even bypassed Congress twice now to send more weapons to Israel illegally without congressional approval. So it's a knee-jerk reaction. But the interesting development here is that something very different has happened, which is that public opinion in the United States for once is not going along with the leadership. Now, recent polls have showed that barely half of Americans, and that includes Republicans and evangelical Christians, barely half of Americans support aid to Israel. That's the first time in history. So something is shifting in the United States, and it's very, very important.
All right, crossing back over now to Oslo and Glenn. I mean, since the start of this onslaught in October, we've seen many officials worldwide talking about the inhumanity taking place in Gaza during the war on kids, but not really any international organizations nor countries, for that matter, that have been able to bring this war to an end. Why not?
Well, I don't think there has been any real desire or any real effort. I mean, even a call for a ceasefire hasn't been done. I think what really happened is over the past decades, the U.S. and its partners have always been almost an autopilot to provide unconditional support for Israel. And of course, on the 7th of October, when Hamas sprung this attack in which civilians were killed, I think there was this immediate instinct to, again, provide full unconditional support for Israel. And again, Israel could do no wrong. This was effectively the argument from the leaders. And then, of course, the Israeli began to, well, what many saw as taking advantage of this by effectively carrying out an operation of ethnic cleansing to, well, remove the Palestinians from Gaza, either, you know, kill them or drive them off the land. And they're already talking about annexing the region. So once it went from bad to worse, I think it was difficult for many Western leaders to walk this back in terms of taking a more critical position. But I think as this becomes evident, it's not just ethnic cleansing, it's also genocide. I think more leaders are now feeling that they have to at least take a rhetorical, critical view in which they criticize the excessive use of violence, but still commit themselves to the usual slogans that, you know, Israel has a right to exist without specifying within what borders, for example. So I think this is the direction that they're taking it. So again, provide some verbal criticism for Israel while not actually doing anything to stop the bloodshed.
Right, right. Well, Daniel, after everything that the Israeli regime has done and is doing, what are your thoughts on the comments made by the French foreign minister, who said that Iran and its affiliates must stop destabilizing acts which could spark a broader conflict in the Middle East?
Well, projection is the one unified Western foreign policy. Always accuse others of what you're doing. Hence the endless accusations that Putin invaded Ukraine and is attacking Ukraine, when in fact it was Ukraine attacking Russians in eastern Ukraine for so many years. And this is the situation, you know, in the U.S., a failure of diplomacy is a failure to objectively understand the world as it is, not as you wish it were. And that's the problem with the neocons, the neoconservatives who run Washington. They don't see the world in a realistic way. They see it as they wish it were. And so they completely fail to understand or to take into account the domestic considerations within Israel. Now, Netanyahu has been facing for years extreme pressure from both sides. He's been an enormous amount of legal pressure, legal problems that have amounted. There are about thousands and thousands of people demonstrating in front of his residence every day that's never reported in the Western media. And so October 7th seemed to me to be a very convenient way for him to appease the radical settlers on the right, who really, and they have been completely open, I'm not conjuring this out of thin air, they are looking for a final solution to the Palestinian problem. And in different varying ways of saying that, there have been several Israeli politicians who've overtly said that, and even Netanyahu himself said we need to resettle Palestinians outside of Palestine. So it's the most open and I would almost say honest incidents of ethnic cleansing we've seen in many, many decades.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Glenn, Blinken also said while he was in the region that Palestinians must be allowed to return to their homes after the war and must not be displaced from Gaza. This as Israeli regime officials, as Daniel just pointed out, continue to make inflammatory and genocidal statements about the removal of the majority of Gaza's population. Let's talk about these different perspectives that are given off publicly. What does it mean when the U.S. is saying this, Israel is saying this? Do you think there really is a difference of opinion, or how do you assess that?
I think it's a different way of framing it or marketing oneself, because you're correct. There's very contradictory message. On one hand, the Israelis are very openly stating that, you know, they want, again, more or less a final solution. They don't want to have the Palestinians there anymore. Meanwhile, the United States is arguing that, you know, they're not deliberately targeting civilians. So there's obviously a disconnect. And in terms of, you know, we see the same with expanding the war. They, you know, the Americans are warning, the war might expand, like there's some third party. But again, they're the one participating in the genocide. They're assisting and supporting striking Lebanon, striking Yemen, striking Iraq, Syria, and most likely behind this terrorist attack in Iran as well. So it's very strange, the rhetoric. It doesn't seem to coincide with the actions that are being taken. So I don't see much that much difference on the European side either. I think they would like to try to maintain some of the humanitarian image and reputation, but still, I don't think that will translate into any various restrictions on Israel or actually putting pressure.
Well, speaking of the European side, the Italian foreign minister, Daniel, has said that G7 major powers are working with Israel to secure a rapid end to its devastating war in Gaza and to reduce civilian casualties. I mean, what are your thoughts on this statement and the use of the word rapid when it has already been more than 3 months since the start of this genocide?
Yeah, you're closing the barn door when the horses are already out is essentially what they're doing. I think the professor makes a great point. They're trying to save face now at this point when the damage has already been done. They're going to go back to their homes. What homes are they going to go back to? Anyone who bothers to have a look at what it looks like in Gaza right now would understand there's no issue of going back to the homes. And forget about just the physical buildings. The infrastructure is completely destroyed. Water, sanitation. We've seen horrific pictures of raw sewage in the streets in Gaza. It's a complete disaster and impossible to go back to. But, you know, I would point out there is kind of a schizophrenia, and the professor, again, makes a great point, which is that on the one hand, the U.S. is escalating and encouraging the escalation of this. On the other hand, they're telling Israel, don't escalate. You know, there was a fascinating article in the Washington Post yesterday. And we should read the Washington Post like the Soviet citizens read Pravda in the old days, which is you're seeing what the deep state wants you to think. And it's a fascinating piece talking about the dangers of escalation. And I think it's the deep state trying to find a way out of this. And they highlight, for example, a Defense Intelligence Agency investigation showing that if Israel expands the war completely against Hezbollah in the north, it may not survive. It may not win. And the losses could be, I think the number was 300,000 to 500,000 on both sides for a massive war. So they're clearly looking for a way out of this, while at the same time, what kinds of sticks do they have? Blinken only comes with carrots. Here's more money. Please stop killing Palestinians. No, we want to keep doing it. Thanks very much. Can you please send us more money? Okay, here's more money and weapons. This is an absolute complete failure. I've never seen such incompetence in diplomacy, probably in the history of the world.
Is it incompetence, though, Daniel? Is it incompetence, or has it been created to do exactly what it's doing? On the one hand, to show, as the professor said, that they actually really want to end this conflict, but at the same time continuing and allowing the conflict to go on.
Well, there's no peace camp in Washington, D.C. Now, Americans, as I mentioned earlier, are not in favor of continuing or escalating support for Israel, particularly and interestingly enough, when you look at younger Americans who don't have the same baggage. The support for Israel is much, much lower among young Americans. You see a lot more protests, hence the crackdowns on free speech in the U.S. universities that we've seen. But absolutely, Washington, D.C. is walking lockstep. And if Biden If Biden does anything to de-escalate, well, he'll have the Republicans on his back saying, Biden is showing weakness in the Middle East. Why aren't we bombing Yemen already? Why aren't we bombing Iran? They're going to go Lindsey Graham on everyone if Biden even does show some diplomacy. So I grant that to you. That's a very, very, very good point. Crocodile tears are being cried, I think.
Well, Glenn, do you think that these Western countries or Western regimes have totally discredited themselves since this genocide has started? I mean, your assessment of that, whether we're talking about the United States, we start off with the United States, or we look at the UK and we look at the other European powers and what they have said and what they have done, and then to see that this genocide is continuing. Your assessment?
No, I think definitely, and this is something that's recognized in the Western media as well, which is that the Americans and Europeans have been really, over the past 2 years, been lobbying the global South very heavy to portray the Russians as these evil imperialists, while the West, you know, we stand on the side of, you know, human rights and decency and human dignity. And then, again, this is also based on a false narrative, of course. But then we have this war now against the Palestinians, and it's all thrown away. We have our leaders watching and enabling a genocide happening, and we can't even ask for a ceasefire. And so I think it's some of it is caused by simply blind loyalty to the United States for the Europeans, because 2 years ago there might have been more opposition, but these days, especially after 2 years of having a war in Europe, the Europeans have become completely obedient to the United States, and the U.S. no longer prioritizes own national interest above serving Israel. So there's something very, very irrational which is happening, because it's very hard for me to even understand how this is in the U.S. interest to alienate themselves among all these countries in the Middle East, and set Israel in this position when it's effectively go to war against everyone. One of the strengths of Israel has always been to isolate all the other ones, pin the regional actors against each other, and then target one state. But what's happening now, it doesn't make any sense. Even if you would want to exterminate the Palestinians, this seems to be a very strange way to go about it. So it's for me, it's very, very rational what's happening.
Daniel, how do you see this playing itself out? On the one hand, Glenn just said that basically the U.S. are actually having policies that it's not in the national interest. You talked about the growing number of young people who actually are against the Israeli regime. But at the same time, this genocide is continuing. Your assessment of this, do you think that they want to just continue basically just wearing down the Palestinians and that this will be extended? Or how do you see it playing out at this point in time?
Well, probably they're counting on fatigue among Americans who are tired of seeing, if they've seen any suffering Palestinians, they'll be tired. And we have a very low, very short attention span in the U.S. When Zelensky was the flavor of the month, we all wanted to, not me, but America wanted to wear Ukrainian flags, and then they dropped them as quickly as they could when he was no longer the flavor of the month. But I think in terms of how do I see it playing out, I think one of the things we're not reading about, and this was reported earlier today, which is that the Israeli government announced in advance of Blinken's arrival another very large drawdown of its troops from Gaza. And I think that can mean one of a couple of things. First of all, and it's not being reported, which is that the Israelis have been very good at killing unarmed civilians, but they've not been as competent in fighting Hamas fighters. And that is a fact. You're looking at, I've seen hundreds of videos of Hamas fighters using essentially homemade RPG weapons to blow up Israeli tanks. Apparently, there have been thousands of casualties in terms of dead and severely wounded that have been admitted by the Defense Ministry of Israel. So you have Israel actually going toe-to-toe with a Hamas that is adept at urban warfare, and they have been gifted by the IDF so many firing positions by the blowing up of Gaza. These guys can hide anywhere. The Israeli soldiers have said, we're fighting ghosts here. It's not going well for the Israeli military on the ground, and the Israeli economy. Remember, these are hundreds of thousands of people that have been conscripted that normally would be driving buses or whatever they do there that are not doing that. The economy is in shambles. These guys are getting killed, and now they're looking for a way out, I think. But one of the ways out may be to expand the war to Lebanon with the understanding that the U.S. will back Israel up.
That okay. On that really note, you know, we issue. Have to continue this hopefully another time, but we are out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me, Glenn Dyson, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Daniel McAdams, executive director, Ron Paul Institute of Lake Jackson, Texas. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.